So I will go first. One thing that I find favorable in my devotional life, I've already mentioned such, is going to bed on time, no later than 9 p.m., I find to be quite favorable for getting up for Mangalarti the next morning. Otherwise, it becomes very difficult to pull myself out of bed at 4 a.m. So for me, a favorable activity, a favorable behavior, a favorable mentality is to get to bed at a regulated time every evening, best for me, no later than 9 o'clock. What I find to be unfavorable is not finishing my rounds before breakfast. As I've gotten involved in many services in the Boston Temple, once the day begins, after 9 p.m., of course, for Vaishnavas, our day begins at 4 a.m., but once we've had breakfast and the business day begins, so to speak, my day is a little more hectic and far more in the mode of passion and ignorance. So chanting my rounds after 9 p.m. is not a very conducive practice in my devotional service. As a theme of the subject of tonight's topic is what's favorable and unfavorable, pratikulya. This is coming from Sharanagati. I've been told we've been speaking on the six principles given by Bhaktivinoda Thakur in the Sharanagati. So the final two are what is favorable and unfavorable. Who would like to go first? To share something, we'll start with things that are unfavorable. Who would like to share some activity, practice, behavior, mentality that is unfavorable to their devotional practice? Please. Watching TV is something that is unfavorable to devotional practice. Very good. Someone else, unfavorable, please. Finding faults with others is something unfavorable to our devotional creeper. Very nice. Waking up late is something unfavorable to our devotional service. Please. Eating a heavy dinner is something that is unfavorable. This is very good. I went to a home program in Boston, and the program we went to is an hour or so away from the temple. And we know home programs is nice prasadam, and there was one, it was a South Indian family. And I had not had idli dosha since my time in India 10 years ago. So she made the devotee's wife made a wonderful dinner prasadam of idli dosha sambar. I completely went overboard. Something that is honoring prasadam, but there has to be, that's my excuse, right? I was honoring prasadam. There has to be some things in moderation. Very well said. A heavy evening meal is not always conducive to our appreciating Mangalarti the next morning. Yes. Janasanga. Yes, exactly. Very good. The association of persons who are materially inclined. That is something that is not favorable to our devotional service. A very interesting point. Actually, we're going to go over that quite a lot in today's discussion. Yes, please. Inappropriate contact with the opposite sex. Yes, we had a wonderful discussion several days ago about how men should treat the ladies and how the ladies should appreciate the men and back and forth. Well said. No more men. Ladies, I will not leave here until you've shared your... And it's actually very important that we share, because sadhu sangha, this is where we get inspiration from one another in our devotional life. We hear what other people are dealing with, and it gives us the recognition that we're not alone in our struggling in devotional service. And we hear about the favorable things that they do, that also gives us inspiration. This person practices this, and it helps them in their spiritual life. Maybe I can do this as well. So it is very, very important to share. So I shall not leave here until I have at least several from our mothers. Oh, I can wait. Yes. Listening to non-devotional movies. That's a very nice one. When I went to listening to non-devotional, sorry? That's a very good one, yes. It was, I had the good fortune to attend some of Prabhupada's Gurukulas, and non-devotional music was not allowed. However, teenage rascals being what they are, there was a black market tape of some non-devotional music on the underground in the Gurukula. In fact, there were several. Because the camera's rolling, I won't name names, my dear friends. They know who they are. And you could see, actually, you could see the impact of non-devotional music in the way the boys, it was an all-boys school, all-boys girl school. The way the boys dress, the way they behave with one another, their language patterns all changed simply because of those two tapes we had going around the girl school. And they were, it took about several months for them to be found out, but a very, very good point, non-devotional music, which, highlights the fact that we should have much more devotional music for those of us who enjoy kirtan and music of that sort. Devotional kirtans, devotional music is actually very, very important for us as well, so we're not tempted by others' such music. One more from the ladies, please. Oh, we have two more. Yes. Food that is not offered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, eating unoffered food. We know from the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita that if we do not eat food that is offered first for sacrifice, we are verily eating only. Thank you. Karma. Well said. Very well said. There was one more. I saw a hand go up in the back. Yes, please.
Criticizing others?
Criticizing others. Very well said. I believe we had one of those here. Finding fault with others. Very, very important that this came up twice. We're going to go over this in more detail. Wonderful, wonderful points. Criticizing others. Now we're going to switch to things that are favorable for devotional activities. Yes, please.
Accountability.
Very, very nice. Accountability, that's a good one. We always tend to blame the brahmachari that is our roommate. Oh, he didn't turn out the lights at 10 o'clock, that's why I didn't get up from Mangal Arati. I know this for a fact, because I have that problem in the Boston Temple. Blaming others for the quality of our Krishna consciousness. No. Our spiritual life is our responsibility. Blaming others for our spiritual development is a cop-out. We are solely responsible for choosing. That's the difference between bhakti yoga and other spiritual processes. Bhakti yoga is based on love of Krishna. Love requires choice. The only way we can choose to love and to serve Krishna is that if we are accountable to ourselves. Very nice. That is a very wonderful, favorable quality to have. More favorable. Yes, please.
Being present.
Explain a little bit more, please.
So, like, if you're chanting your rounds, you're not going through a checklist of what you have to do after
chanting your rounds. If I'm performing a service, it's not about service, but if you manage to do this, it's a little bit of a transition. Very, very nice. I was once taking care of some students in Gurukula. And as a teacher, I learned most of my lessons I got, I went to school, I studied the philosophy as well, but some of the most important philosophical lessons I got were from children. Because they have a way, an innocence of just asking you a question, of saying something, and you're realizing that there's some an art that we have to clear up. The reason why I say that is because what you've just said is an issue that I have. I'm chanting my rounds and I'm visualizing a to-do list for the day's services. Very, very important to remain present. We know that this is one of the offenses against chanting the holy name of the Lord is inattentiveness. Looking at my to-do list while I'm chanting my rounds. Planning my week's activities while I'm chanting my rounds. On the altar, in the Boston Temple, I do the Mangal Arati every morning. On the altar, offering offerings to Krishna, and I'm thinking about an argument I have to have or a confrontation I'm going to have with someone else later in the day. So being present in our services, that's also seva aparad. To perform service and not be present in our service, that's the definition of seva aparad. We'll talk about aparad as we go along. What is my time limit, Prabhu? Ah, you heard that.
6:30.
Remaining present. Very good. More favorable activities. Activities, mentalities, behaviors for devotional development. Yes, I saw a hand up in the back. Favorable activities? No. Over here? Yes. Shravanadi sudha chitta koreyo dai. Yes, hearing and chanting, hearing and reading and studying Prabhupada's books. What a novel idea. Reading and studying Prabhupada's books. We should make it a habit of reading every single day. It is something, it was easy when I was living in India and I was serving there. I could read, I was required by my the person where I was serving in the Gurukula there, and Gurukula Maharaj had all the older boys and teachers make sure we read every day. Otherwise, if we're not reading and imbibing Krishna consciousness, how can we share it with others in our realizations? When I came to the United States in 2000, that habit fell away. I've only restarted the habit again in the past several years, where I read one chapter of the Gita every day. I don't read the purports, I read just the translations, because that's all I can get my time for. But just that much, that's a minimum. That is a minimum. Read one chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. If you cannot do the purports, at least do the translations. And not only that, read it every day for 7 days. So I'm currently on chapter 7. I read chapter 7 of the Bhagavad Gita every day for 7 days. At least the translations. I try and get the purports in there as well, if I'm not chasing silliness in my service. But at least read the translations, one chapter of the Bhagavad Gita every day for 7 days, and go into chapter 8, 7 days. Chapter 9, 7 days. And do it again. And as you read, the more you read, and the more we go through life, you read the same chapter again and again, but because we're going through different life phases, we're constantly getting new information, new realizations, new inspiration from reading. Who's initiated again? Raise your hand. Who's endeavoring for initiation, aspiring for initiation? Read every day. For those of us who are aspiring for initiation, who are initiated, there is no excuse not to be doing so. Initiation is a commitment to both ourselves, our spiritual masters, and to Krishna, that we will do this. Otherwise, what's the purpose of initiation? Initiation is a marriage. It is a commitment. Of course, marriage in the 21st century is, we won't go down that road. Those of us who are initiated, aspiring for initiation, reading every single day, if it's 5 minutes, is crucial and critical, especially for many of you who are not living in the temple. I'm assuming about 90% of the persons in this room do not live in the temple. You have families. You have careers. So it's very important that if it's just a single minute to read one page, it's critically important. For those of us who have the privilege of living in the temple, and that's what living in the temple is. It is indeed a privilege. And it is also a privilege that everyone can do. Living in the temple is not easy. So for those of us who have the privilege of living in the temple, if you're not reading every day, reevaluate. Seriously, reevaluate your devotional practices. Living in the temple, read every single day. There is no excuse not to if you're living in the temple. A few more favorables, and then we'll go into the... Yes, Prabhu, please. Harinam Sankirtana Ki! Yes, the engagement in Yuga Dharma. There are four Yuga Dharmas. One is meditating, standing on our heads. How many can do that? We have at least one, so we have at least one stalwart in the temple room. Nice. Fire sacrifices. How many can light a fire with mantra alone? Okay. And deity worship. Knowing my own example, when I do deity worship, my mind is unfortunately somewhere else. Deity worship also, according to the strict rules and regulations, is quite a elevated activity. Srila Prabhupada and the Vaishnavasara Sampradaya has given us deity worship to help us recognize God is a person. So they've given us the Archa Vigraha form of the Lord. But the Yuga Dharma, chanting Hare Krishna in the association of devotees, is what we can all do. One more favorable. One more from the men and one from the ladies. Have you done one yet? Favorable, please. Serving the devotees. Absolutely critical, yes. Serving the devotees, getting the mercy of the devotees. Serving devotees means developing a relationship with devotees. What's the difference between service and slavery? Love, choice, Love choice. The saying, you can't have love without choice, and you can't have choice without love. Exactly. There's service and there's slavery. What makes service service is choosing to do so, a loving relationship. Loving relationship is mutual. By performing service for the spiritual master, for the devotees give us their appreciation, their blessings. As Krishna sees that, Krishna appreciates. I use Nityananda Pranprabhu as an example. I will ask to do so again. He has a wonderful son. By serving, giving or showing appreciation for, and helping his son, do I get his favor, yes or no? Yes, of course, that's a rhetorical question. By serving the devotees in a loving relationship, we get the blessings of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Serving devotees, that's devotional service. That is bhakti yoga. When we go back home, back to Godhead, what will we do? We're not going to stand on our heads. Everything we do is based on serving another person, helping the manjaris serve the gopis, helping the other devotees in Goloka Vrindavan or whatever pastime is going on in serving Krishna. What we do here is the exact same thing we're going to do when we go back home, back to Godhead. This is a trial run. Another favorable from the ladies. Yes, please. Listening to the pastimes of Krishna, yes. We read the Krishna book every evening in the Boston Temple. It's absolutely wonderful. Reading the pastimes of Krishna, absolutely fantastic. Reading the pastimes of Krishna, it does many important things, but one thing that I've understood or realized in reading the pastimes of Krishna is that it makes our relationship with Krishna, the possibilities of our relationship with Krishna, very, very personal. We have a picture in the Boston Temple. That picture's not here. The picture in the back there will do with Krishna sitting on Yashoda Mai's lap. There's a picture in the Boston Temple in the temple room of Krishna laying on a banyan tree, a banyan leaf, sucking on his big toe. What concept, what other religious, major religious process says God is a baby floating on a leaf sucking his big toe? That concept is unimaginable to any other spiritual process in the world. God is a baby in a diaper on a banyan leaf sucking his big toe. That's God. Inconceivable. So reading the stories in Krishna book, seeing that we can have so many different relationships with Krishna, we can help Mother Yashoda and the gopis change Krishna's diaper. When we read the stories of Krishna book, we can see the possibilities of having a relationship with Krishna in so many different ways. What's the difference between Vishnu, the Vishnu forms of the Lord, and Krishna? Many different. That's a rhetorical question. I will explain to you because we have limited time. The difference is that we can have a relationship with Krishna in all of the five rasas. We cannot have a relationship with Mahavishnu in all of the five rasas. We cannot have a parental relationship with Mahavishnu. Mahavishnu is Mahavishnu. Garbhadaksha Vishnu, Narayan is Narayan. It is only with Krishna that we can help Mother Yashoda take care of him as a baby. It is only with Krishna, there was another wonderful picture where I believe, it may not be Krishna, maybe Lord Balaram, where there's a plate of rasgulla, and obviously the boys are having lunch, and I think it's Balaram, maybe Krishna, they have their mouth open and their eyes closed, and the cowherd boy is going to put a dandelion in Krishna's mouth. Inconceivable to do that to Mahavishnu. That's the difference. And that's why reading the stories of Krishna book is so important for us who are trying to establish a personal, intimate, individual relationship with Krishna. Okay. So we've talked about favorable and unfavorable different things. The nectar devotion, 15 minutes and counting. The nectar devotion is all about things that are favorable and unfavorable. So I'm not going to launch into a class of the Nectar Devotion here. But it's important that, how many have read the Nectar Devotion in full? Raise your hand nice and high. It's okay if you haven't. I've only done it once in my life. The only reason why I've read it from back to back is because my teacher told me that if I didn't, I'd never have sweet rice again. So that's the only reason why I've read Nectar Devotion. So it's, don't feel bad if you haven't read Nectar Devotion. So if you've read Nectar Devotion from cover to cover, raise your hand nice and high. And it's important, raise your hand high, because it's important for others to see that there are devotees who have read the Nectar Devotion. They can read it. They can ask questions to those who have read Nectar Devotion. Sadhu Sangha is very important. We're all trying to, we're all in this boat, this wonderful Jaladuta, if you will. We're all in it together. There's no, we're not judging each other. We're trying to help one another here. We're on this boat together. So if you've read Nectar Devotion and someone comes, I've read this particular thing in Nectar Devotion, can you explain it to me? So when I ask these questions, who've read this, raise your hand high to show that you're available to help those who have not read it. You can share the difficulties you've had in reading Nectar Devotion. I had a lot of difficulties reading Nectar Devotion, and I only read it because I had to. I would not have passed the test. I did it for tests. I read for the test, kind of thing. Of course, now I'm a little more mature, so I try to read to understand. Not that that's working very well, but we're attempting. The Nectar Devotion is all about things that are favorable, activities, behaviors, mentalities that are favorable for devotional service, activities, behaviors, and mentalities that are unfavorable for devotional service. So, put the Nectar Devotion on your, get it on your Kindle, make it something that you're going to read before the end of the year. Nectar Devotion is a fairly thick book. We can also go to the Nectar of Instruction. The first two or three verses in the Nectar of Instruction talks about six things that are unfavorable in the practice of our devotional service, and six things that are unfavorable and six things that are favorable in our devotional service. Of these six things that are both unfavorable and favorable in the Nectar of Instruction, who's read the Nectar of Instruction? Cover to cover. Very good, very nice. If you've not read the Nectar of Instruction, go to the gift shop. I'm sure they'll have copies of the Nectar of Instruction in the gift shop. It's a small book. You can read it in, you can, whether you understand it or not is another thing, but you'll read it when in 30 minutes, 30, 45 minutes. It is a small book. It's critically important that we read that, because we see all the things that are both favorable and unfavorable in our practice of devotional service. Now, for those of us who are initiated, aspiring for initiation, or want to become initiated in the future, no excuse. Read Nectar of Instruction. Otherwise, what's the purpose of initiation? Read Nectar of Instruction. So a Nectar of Instruction has a six things that are favorable, six things that are unfavorable. Of these six things, there are two that we find in both categories. Association and following the rules and regulations in the scripture. On the unfavorable side, we have giving up association that is not good for our devotional development, and not giving up the rules and regulations in the scriptures that will help us, for our spiritual development. Those same two are on the favorable side. Being in the association of devotees who are mature, senior, can help us develop, and following the rules and regulations in the scriptures that are conducive to our devotional practices. We're going to focus on one today, association. There's a story, I've heard this story several times. I was told, so I will let you do your own research, I was told it was with Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami. I was also told two other names were mentioned in this story, and they were both authoritative personalities. So do your own research about who these personalities were. The story remains the same. There was one, I would just use the term Goswami, and in your own research, I haven't had the time to do the research, but in your own research, find out who exactly these personalities were. There was one Goswami on the bank of the Radhakund pond in Vrindavan. This Goswami was meditating, and in his meditation and absorption in Krishna consciousness, he envisioned a pastime of Radha and Krishna. In this pastime, it was Radha. She was picking kadamba flowers. And those of you who know kadamba flowers, most Indian devotees, I'm sure you know what kadamba flowers are. They're these large, round flowers, very, very fragrant. They grow on a huge tree. And they're actually quite difficult to pick, a kadamba flower. It doesn't come off like a nice flower. You have to yank, tug, pull, twist, and so on. Radharani was picking kadamba flowers from this tree, and of course the tree is high, so she's trying to jump up and pick these kadamba flowers. And Krishna comes along, and he sees Radharani struggling with trying to pick these kadamba flowers. And Radharani asks Krishna, can you please go up to the tree, climb up on the tree, stand on the branch, and push the branch down so that I can get a nice grip, leverage, and pick the kadamba flowers. So Krishna climbs up the kadamba tree, stands on the branch, and he puts his weight on the steps on the branch, pushes the branch down, and Radharani grabs a kadamba flower and she's picking kadamba flowers. So as she gets a handful of a nice kadamba flower and she's trying to pick it, Krishna pulls his weight off the branch. Radharani flies in the air, kadamba flower is here, hair there, and so on and so forth. A very comical scene. And the Goswami who's having this vision, he sees it and he chuckles to himself, seeing this wonderful pastime of Radha Krishna. And as he's enjoying that, the vision disappears. And he's in separation of this vision and seeing the pastimes of Radha and Krishna, so he's trying to again get into his meditation. It's not happening. He's spending hours and hours on end trying to have more visions in his meditations on Radha and Krishna. He finally realizes it's not coming. Something is not happening. So he goes to one of the other Goswamis in Vrindavan and he asks, my dear Goswami, and he relays a story, I was having this wonderful vision of Radha and Krishna and it broke and I was unable to get it back. I was unable to get my concentration back in order to have more of these, witness more of these pastimes of Radha and Krishna. And the other Goswami said, why don't you go around to all the other Goswamis in Vrindavan and ask them if you've committed an offense to them. So the first Goswami, he goes to all the different saintly persons around Radhakund and he's asking for, have I done anything in the past to offend you, to hurt you? Have I in some way offended you? And he's going around and around and no, not at all. And he comes to this one saintly person who is invalid, and he's stricken by polio, whatever the issue may be. And he asks the handicapped person, my dear Prabhu, have I done anything to offend you in any way? And the handicapped devotee says, well, no, it's insignificant. So then the Goswami thinks, oh, is there something, anything that I may have done to offend you? And the devotee says, well, actually, yes, earlier this morning, I saw you were meditating on Radhakund, and in difference to your meditation, I went to the side to take a bath, but over on the side it was muddy because it was unfinished and I could not get in properly, so I slipped and I fell in the water. When I fell in the water, I saw you were laughing at me. So I felt a little, I know it's my anartha, I know it's my false ego, I want people to feel sympathetic for me, I know it's my pride. So it's nothing, I work on myself to get over it. So the Goswami understood. It is because the offense to the devotees that Krishna is not always appreciative. And it's very easy for us to understand this. Offenses, abuses, insults, criticisms to our loved ones is not tolerated. If someone says, oh, Mahavishnu, you're a moron. It's okay. But if someone does such to my loved ones, it's an entirely different kettle of fish. What is favorable to our devotional service is association to devotees, serving the devotees. What is unfavorable is Vaishnava Aparad. Vaishnava Aparad is the single most damaging thing we can do to our devotional service. Vaishnav Aparad has to stop. There is no ifs, ands, or buts. There's no considerations. We're talking about accountability. He's not here. There is no ifs, ands, or buts. Vaishnava Aparad simply has to stop. Sometimes we hear this question. Why is it we see devotees who have been in Krishna consciousness for 10, 20, 30, 40, now going on 50 years? They've been practicing chanting and they fall away from Krishna consciousness. Why is that? Very simple. We are pleasure-seeking. Satchitananda. We're always interested. The very quality, the very nature of the spirit soul is to experience happiness. We are in a material body. We are conditioned by the modes of material nature, so we attempt to seek happiness through the material senses. But the fact that we're seeking happiness is part and parcel of who we are, being created in the image of Krishna, being part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the fact that we are seeking pleasure is not the problem. That's a given. What is key, what the problem is that we've begun the process of Krishna consciousness, but we're not experiencing pleasure. It's as simple as that. Ruchi means a taste for our Krishna consciousness. We've chanted for 30 years, and we know from Shishashakam, my hair is not standing on end, and all the different qualities that are described in someone who's experiencing taste in chanting. So what's the danger? Because I'm a pleasure-seeking living entity by nature, if I'm not experiencing pleasure in my devotional service, I'm going to stop doing it. When Prabhupada commonly said that Krishna consciousness is scientific, it is. It's simple. Not always easy, but it is simple. If we're not experiencing ruchi, if we're not experiencing a taste in our Krishna consciousness, we will not continue to do it because we are pleasure-seeking by nature. So we must come to a level where we are experiencing joy in our chanting, where we enjoy getting up for Mangalarti, we enjoy serving the devotees, we enjoy cleaning the bathrooms, we enjoy mopping the floors, we enjoy cooking, cutting potatoes, anything that's in connection with Krishna and Krishna's devotees, we must come to a point where we have a taste for it. Well, we would rather do that and nothing else. Without that taste, our devotional practice has an expiration date. That should be a very, very sobering realization. Without taste, our devotional practice has an expiration date because we are pleasure seeking. If we are not experiencing pleasure in our devotional practices, we are going to stop such practices. If I don't enjoy bananas, I'm not going to eat bananas. It's not difficult to understand. I enjoy pizza, so I'm going to gravitate towards pizza. If Mangalarti is the emotional equivalent of a banana for me, I'm not going to go to Mangalarti. If chanting 16 rounds is the emotional equivalent of a banana, I'm not going to chant 16 rounds. If serving my God brothers, my other devotees, is the emotional equivalent of a banana, I will not serve other devotees. If cleaning the bathroom is the emotional equivalent of eating a banana, I will not do it. So we have to come to a point where our Krishna consciousness provides a taste. Now what I'm getting at is what destroys or gets in the way, what's the obstacle of experiencing taste? If we're doing everything, we're getting up from Mangalarti year after year, we're chanting 16 rounds a day, we are trying to serve the Vaishnavas with a scowl on our face, we're trying to clean the bathroom while we're growling at the temple president. We're doing all these things, but we're not getting a taste. We know that if we do not get a taste, there's an expiration date. What is that obstacle? The obstacle is aparad. Offenses to Nam, Seva, Dham, and Vaishnava, the four aparads, are the obstacles that get in the way of us experiencing ruchi. Nam aparad is offenses to chant in, against chanting the holy name. It's 10 offenses against the chanting of the holy name. We won't go over them now because I've hit 6:30 and people are looking at me like, Mahavishnu, get off the Vyasa sign, we're hungry. So I'll wrap this up. There are four types of aparad, nam aparad. There are 10 types of offenses against the chanting of the holy name. Won't go to them now. You know where to find them. Go to the other devotee. Who knows the 10 offenses against the chanting of the holy name? Raise your hand. Share with others who don't know. Shri Shri Kishore Kishore Ji. Jagannabali Subhadramai Ki. Gorni Tai Ki. Namaparad is one of the four. Damaparad. Damaparad. Dam means the places of pilgrimage. The Chicago Temple is the Holy Dam. Damaparad, we know from the Srimad Bhagavatam, means when we go to a place of pilgrimage for this express reason of enjoying our senses, and we're considered no better than a cow or an ass. What do cows and asses do? They go to the Holy Dam, they drink the Yamuna River, and they eat the grass. They have no concept of what's supposed to be happening at the Holy Dam. What is supposed to be happening at the Holy Dam? Hearing and chanting from the devotees who reside in the Holy Dam. To go to the Holy Dam and do anything other than that is Damaparad. To go to the Holy Dam with the express purpose of finding a wife is Damaparad. To go to the Holy Dam with the express purpose of getting the gulab jamuns outside in the lobby, which I'm going to be doing, is Damaparad. Of course, it doesn't mean that we do not enjoy these things. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying we cannot come to the temple and enjoy rasgulla that we have in the lobby. It doesn't mean we cannot come to the temple and enjoy meeting our friends. That's okay. But what I'm saying, Damaparad, is we see the Dam, the holy place, as a place for my personal sense enjoyment rather than a place that's going to increase my devotional life. That's Damaparad. So it's Namaparad, Damaparad. Seva aparad. Seva aparad, we talked about this before in a previous class. We talked about how all of our bhakti is mishra. Mishra means mixed. In the beginning stage, our chanting, our service, everything we do is mixed with the three modes of material nature. Seva aparad is like in the chanting the offenses against the holy name. When we do it, the seventh offense is to commit sinful activities. On the strength of chanting is nam aparad. It doesn't mean that we should chant hoping to become free from sins. That's okay. But it's thinking that I'm going to chant my 16 rounds this morning and then go out and have a burger. And one's going to nullify the karma of the other. It's the same thing in Seva Aparad. When we use or think of Seva Aparad, Seva Aparad is similar in that we perform service with the express reason to either fulfill our personal sense gratification. Primarily that, to fulfill our personal sense gratification or to alleviate us from some material distress. Remember, this is the express reason for it. It doesn't mean that we can perform devotional service and we feel good about it. In the beginning, that's going to be there. But when we perform devotional activities with reasons other than, express specific reasons other than service to Krishna, that is seva aparad. And we can go into more details of the different types of aparad, but I won't. So we have these three types of aparad. Nam, Seva, Dam. Chicago is the Holy Dam. My spiritual master, Bhakti Tirtha Swami, passed away in Gita Nagari so that I would understand and his disciples would understand that Gita Nagari, Chicago, Boston Temple, these places are holy dams. We have to see this temple as such. So, moving right along. The fourth of the aparads is Vaishnava aparad. Of all the four, the Vaishnava aparad is most important. Because if we perform nam aparad, our bead bag is not going to jump up and smack us in the face. If we perform dam aparad, the Chicago temple is not going to swallow us up. If we perform save aparad, the potatoes we're peeling is not going to hit us in the head. The only way we get feedback is from Vaishnavas. We do not get feedback when we perform nam aparad. We do not get feedback when we perform seva aparad. We do not get feedback when we perform dhammaparad. We only get feedback when we offend and dealing with other devotees. It is with other Vaishnavas that we get this feedback. And this feedback is crucial. Otherwise, how do we know what we're doing? How do we know when we're performing dhammaparad if my spiritual master doesn't say, Mahavishnu, you're chanting like an idiot? That's dhammaparad. Get it together. Mahavishnu, on the altar, thinking about a confrontation you have to have with the building contractor is seva aparad. It is through Vaishnavas that we eliminate the other aparads. Vaishnava association. Vaishnava association is critical to our devotional development. Vaishnava aparad is the single most dangerous thing that we can do to destroy our devotional life. Because what happens with Nityananda Pran when he sees that I mistreat his son? He's going to remove me from the company of his son. He's going to remove his son from my association. When we offend the devotees, Krishna and Maya are going to remove us from the association of devotees. Maya will remove us. The purpose of Maya is to bring us closer to Krishna. If we're performing Vaishnava aparad, that's not bringing us closer to Krishna. So she's going to remove us from Krishna so we can act like an idiot without offending devotees until we learn our lesson in the material nature. When we learn our lesson, then we're able to come back into the devotee association. If we perform Vaishnava aparad, we will lose the privilege of associating with devotees. Association of devotees, we're talking about... Association with devotees is critical. We're talking about favorable and unfavorable. It is the most favorable thing in our devotional service. Association of devotees. Vaishnava aparad, even more so than namaparad, has to stop. We know namaparada yuktanam. If you perform namaparad, the key to the recommendation is that if you're performing namaparad, continue to chant. Don't stop chanting. By continuing to chant, you'll clear your namaparad. That is not the case with devotees. Performing Vaishnava aparad, you don't keep performing the Vaishnava aparad to free you from it. Vaishnava aparad has to stop. It simply has to stop. Our association with devotees is absolute. How we treat one another. Krishna is watching. In Goloka Vrindavan, we're not doing anything different from what we're doing right here, right now. Nothing changes. If we're mistreating devotees here, Krishna is not going to have us in Goloka Vrindavan. Absolutely, unequivocally not. Nityananda Prabhu was not going to have me in the association of his son if he sees that I cannot treat other children properly. He will not do that. I'll finish on this last point, then we'll go to a few questions. Forgiveness. We are going to make mistakes. We are going to offend other devotees. We're going to criticize other devotees. When a devotee does something, I think, ah, oh, this devotee, I'll criticize him. Insult that devotee, behind that devotee's back, no less. That is going to happen because we are under the modes of material nature. What we must do is in the story of the Goswami who lost the vision of Radha and Krishna, he went around and he found that he did not stop until he found the devotee whom he offended. And he asked for forgiveness. Seeking forgiveness is the most important activity, behavior, mentality. It is the number one behavior mentality we can cultivate in our Krishna consciousness. It is a progression. If we know how to ask for forgiveness sincerely, with our full heart, if we learn how to seek forgiveness, apologize, endeavor to make amends, then what happens? We remain in the association of devotees. By remaining in the association of devotees, we're able to eliminate, first of all, be aware of, other devotees make us aware of our aparads. We become aware of our aparads. When we become aware of our aparads, we can begin to purify and eliminate them. When our aparads are eliminated, what happens? Yes. You get a taste. Why is a taste crucial? I will wait. Why is a taste crucial? No, you're too smart. No, Jagannath, not you. Why is a taste crucial? We have to get this. Yes, so our devotional activities do not expire. We are pleasure seeking. We are going to go for the pizza. We can't help it. Idli sambar, whatever. You get my point. We're going to go for it. If our devotional activity does not have that taste for us, we will not continue our devotional service. Quick recap. The ability to ask for forgiveness is key. My quick story, and then I promise to end. I was going through some personal issues in life in my devotional service, and Gurukul Maharaj was helping me. And he said, Mahavishnu, I was in Sweden at the time, and I was, one of the questions I had was, should I get involved in one of the temples there? They wanted me to help in some fashion. And I was having some issues. So Maharaj said, Mahavishnu, the key, and it's incredible the way he said this, the key to your devotional service is in the possession of the person whom you have a legitimate right to despise. Do we understand that? The key to our advancement in devotional service, the key to our advancement in our bhakti yoga, to our maturity in bhakti yoga, rests with the person whom we have a legitimate right to despise. I don't like Sevananda. This is an example. He looks at me like, we're good friends, so I can tease him. Me and Sevananda are having this issue, and I don't like Sevananda. We don't talk. I have this block with Sevananda. Yet at the same time, I'm going around, I'm dancing in the kirtan, I'm chanting 64 rounds on Ekadasi, I'm cleaning all the floors, doing all these wonderful devotional activities. But when someone mentions the name Sevananda, I either don't say anything or my blood boils, steam comes out of my ear. I cannot be in the same room with Sevananda. The key to my devotional service is not my 16 rounds. It's not my cleaning the floors. It's not my dancing in Mangalarti. It's whether or not I can say, Sevananda Prabhu, please forgive me. That's where my devotional life begins, right there. Everything else is secondary until I deal with that. We have to recognize that devotees are the gateways to Krishna. We have to stop Vaishnava Aparad. We talk about favorable and unfavorable. It begins right there with Vaishnava Aparad. The ability to say, I am sorry, is the first and most important habit of a Vaishnava. We have to have Vaishnava association. It is critical. We have Vaishnava association. We're going to make mistakes. I am saturated with the mode of ignorance. Because I'm saturated in the mode of ignorance, I'm going to make mistakes. So when I step on Sevananda's toe, if I'm completely involved in personal pride and arrogance, I will not ask for forgiveness. Krishna will remove me from his association. And it happens in a very, very subtle way. Maya will give us a job in Alaska that pays $200,000 a year. And we think, well, I can't, you know, it's away from the devotees, but, you know, I can send donations to the temple. It's Alaska. I say this because it's happened to me. It's happened to me. When I do not appreciate devotees, Krishna has removed me from their association until I figure it out. And it's been done in such, I think it's my choice. Oh, I'm choosing this. The mind goes off, manodharma goes off into these excuses of why I'm leaving devotee association. We will end there. I'm 15 minutes over, so I shall shut up. Any questions, comments, or corrections? Yes, we'll just go in a row. Yes?
So could you give some advice on how to maintain that state where we can admit to ourselves we committed some offense against a certain devotee or devotees, and then come to that, come
Good. 2 points. Number one, it's not a question. You have. You have, we have offended a devotee. You cannot. Oh, sorry. Thank you. He asks, how can we come to the understanding, the realization that we have admit to ourselves that we've offended a devotee? It was part one. Part two was, how do we then sincerely seek forgiveness once we've admitted that? So the first thing, the first part of that was, number one, let's take it for granted. We have offended devotees. We have. Just like, and that's a wonderful story about the Goswami on the bank of Radhakun. He was sitting there in meditation of Krishna, and a devotee was offended. So it's not a question of if. The question is, we have offended a devotee. So now going to the second part. So now let's not think that we're so perfect that I never offend devotees. Especially those of us who are in a management position, my biggest problem is trying to do my service effectively and not offend devotees. Forgive me, Father, for I have sinned. It's very difficult. So we have offended devotees. That's the very nature of so much interaction on a material level. Second part of that is, how do we then come to, what do we do? How do we come to apologize? A litmus test for myself is, when I see that particular person or that person with whom I'm having this issue, what's the difference between my apologizing sincerely and insincerely is when I'm ready to make amends. And that's a crucial point, because it's easy to say, oh, I'm sorry. Vaishnava Sevananda, I'm sorry I stepped on your toe this morning. Goodbye. See you next week. Nah, that's not right. Making amends is the crucial litmus test. Vaishnava Sevananda, I stepped on your toe this morning. Do you need a Band-Aid? Do you need a foot soak? Make amends for what you've done. That requires a little more sincerity, because you have to invest yourself in that relationship and in that devotee. So for me, I've offended someone, I've had some issue. If I'm not ready to make amends, I know that my apology, any apology I give, is insincere, because I'm not ready to make amends. I still have something, well, actually, he said it first. So I'm not, something is, there's a knot still there. Use Vaishnav association. Go to other Vaishnavas and say, this is what I'm dealing with. Like, I went to Gurukul Maharaj and I said, Gurukul Maharaj, I have this knot. And he said, you know, that person has the key to your spiritual life. Figure it out. When we chant our rounds, ask Krishna for help, for purification of our hearts, so that we can make amends. There's an apology. An apology is the verbal. To make amends is when we go the next step and invest our time and energy in that relationship. So it's not just to say, Sevananda, I'm sorry. It's to say, Sevananda, I'm sorry. Do you need a foot rub? People are like, ooh. That's Vaishnav Seva. We have to see devotees as gateways who are to Krishna Prema. Was it you? Oh. Yes. Yes, I believe so. Yeah. I think yes.
Hare Krishna.
In the Goswami story, the Goswami who offended the devotee unintentionally, and practically translating that to now, sometimes we do an offense that's like, at least from my point of view, any sane person would not consider an offense. But to this particular person, they took it offensively. So then, and we don't even know that we offended them. So then what do we do?
Very good question. Everyone got that? Sometimes I step on Sevananda's toe. Sevananda, it's a toe. Get over it. That's another one. Get over it. If I stepped on someone else's toe, they wouldn't mind. That's like saying, I have a hammer. I hit an elephant with a hammer, a 2-pound hammer. Nothing happens. I take the same hammer and I hit a cat. The effects are different. And then I say, well, when I hit the elephant, nothing happened. You see the logic of that. But let's not laugh, because we do that. We take a 2-pound hammer, we hit an elephant, nothing happens. The elephant loves it. Do it again. We take the same 2-pound hammer, we hit a cat, and we wonder what happened. That is due to our own insensitivity. We have to deal with each individual person according to who they are. Not because I'm walking around with a 2-pound hammer, I start hitting people over the head. We have to have individual personal relationships. Bhakti yoga is all about two people developing a deep, personal, intimate relationship. So put down a 2-pound hammer that you use to massage the elephant and sit down with the cat and pet it. So when a person says, oh, well, I did the same thing to someone else and they didn't have a problem with it, that is an indicator of our insensitivity. The best definition of love is to understand another person and then to interact with that person based on that understanding. To understand, spend my time, energy in understanding Sevananda and then interacting with Sevananda based on that understanding. And then recognizing that I can't use that same understanding to relate with my mother. My mother will slap me. Each individual relationship is based on the understanding in that relationship. So it is not an excuse to go around with a 2-pound hammer and say, well, when I hit that person, they didn't have a problem with it. Why are you upset when I hit you with it? That is a cop-out. We should come to, and I will stop and end here. Devotee relationships are individual. Krishna had so many, and who said, we talked about one of the favorable things to about devotional service to read the stories of Krishna book? Who said that? Very well said, because it shows in Krishna's relationships, he deals with all of them individually based on who they are. When we read the stories of how Krishna dealt with some of his different wives, some of the stories you read in the Mahabharata and the Krishna book, it is incredible how he dealt with each and every one of his wives completely differently. Rukmini was the more sedate, submissive type. Satyabhama was the excitable one. He dealt with them entirely differently. That is a wonderful thing of reading Krishna book stories. See how Krishna dealt with each individual person according to who they were. So going around with a 2-pound hammer and not understanding why he did that to him, why are you upset? Get over it. That speaks to our insensitivity. ISKCON founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada ki, Sri Kishori Kishori ki, Jagannath Baladev Subhadramai ki, Gornitai ki. I want to thank Nityananda Pran Prabhu for giving me this. And I'm going to try to bring him to Boston more often. So if he's absent from here, he's in Boston. Sri Krishna Bhagavan ki.